now there's three congressional races in New York City and environs. I don't know how you fucking pronounce that. But basically, all where Zoran Mamdani has backed a slate of left-wing populist, progressive populist, what do you want to call them, who are two, you know, including Brad Lander, who was his former competitor for mayor, who ended up dropping out of the race and then campaigning with him and endorsing him. It was really cute, like Brad Lander, much older, like boomer, like, you know, city biking around town next to Zoran. It was very cute. And now Zoran returned the favor. I don't like to make strong predictions, but I'm going to say, like, it definitely looks like all or most of these candidates are going to win. It looks like the age of corporatism is, you know, the tide of corporatism in among the Republican Party we know is gone. In the Democratic Party, you and I have seen it coming, but it looks like now they're really in trouble. I mean, of course, New York City isn't the entire country, but far from it. But still, I got to say, they're taking note, right? Like, I mean, the thing is, Brad, I mean, these are anti-Zionist Jewish New Yorkers who are swinging these races to the anti-Zionist left. It's worth noting. It's also a huge commentary on, you know, how unpopular Israel and its policies are now.
Yes. Yeah. The reason that Mamdani was so dangerous to the political establishment, and I'm putting dangerous in quotes because
threatening.
But I'm trying to make the point, right? That he showed that a person can take an anti-Israeli point of view and beat the living shit out of his opposition with it. He didn't hide. He didn't run. Mm-hmm. He didn't cower for cover in the corner the moment that Israel was bought up and they were screaming blood libel. He plowed through it. It's like, you know, the Enterprise is going to be destroyed. And Picard says, fuck it, just go through the hole. Just run through it. It's that. It's this idea of confronting this thing directly with the majority of the population itself in the country saying, we think you're committing a genocide, or at the very least, we think you are mass murdering women and children. You're killing babies. That's what we think as a population. And the only issue is, how do you harness that into a political cadre as opposed to these people who are effectively being paid off? The people who are being paid off thinks that this is dangerous because they assume, well, AIPAC and all of this money is going to come into the thing in order to change the dynamics. That may work against Thomas Massey. That may not work in New York City, which is what Mamdani is showing, that, hey, there's a path through this that works, that pushes back on all of these people who are screaming that they need to go to Israel before they deal with the priorities of New York. No, it's a good thing. I mean, the catch is, do other people recognize what is taking place in these elections and the path that they could take in regards to these elections in order to get elected? That's the interesting thing to me. I mean, do you think this is something indicative of something larger, that this goes beyond New York into other states?
It does, because of the economic populism side of this. I mean, let's not forget, right? Like, as big of a deal as, you know, Israel's genocide against Gaza, it wasn't really a war, so it has been since 2023. It wasn't the main topic of the congressional, of the mayoral race that elected Mamdani. He ran on affordability or unaffordability in New York, one of the most expensive cities in the country. You know, the quality of life in the city is going down. Unemployment is going up. Underemployment is going up, yet the rents keep going up. And it's unsustainable now that's a national problem, right? I mean, it's more extreme in places like LA, San Francisco, and New York. But, you know, I mean, that was true in Thomas Massey's district there in Northwest Kentucky, too. So I think that's the part that I think is super interesting. And I think that's the part where Donald Trump is really fucking up the Republican Party in this cycle, in the midterms. I mean, we have a national affordability crisis. It's been at the top of the polls now for several years. Obviously, you know, inflation is high. You know, people are terrified about AI. Economic insecurity is a huge thing. And you have the president saying, I love the inflation. I don't worry about high gas prices. I don't care. That doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is making sure that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. Well, I mean, the American people don't like that. And when I say the American people, I don't mean it like when right wingers say the American people, and they just really mean conservative Americans. I mean the American people, left, middle, right, everybody. Nobody likes it. And so, you know, when you feel like not only not seen, but when you feel completely brushed off, when you're suffering, you're going to be pissed and you're going to go to the polls and you're going to lash out.
But we weren't the American public brushed off. I mean, like, does Trump really come across to you at any point, be it first term, this term, or anywhere in between, that he cared about the American public?
Yeah, in 2015, 2016, when he went to places like Scranton and Dayton over and over and over again and said, you know, these big, beautiful factories, they're all closed. It's a shame. These jobs went to China. They're over, you know, all that stuff. He was basically, his message was, I see you. It must suck to live here. I wouldn't want to live like this. I'm going to change it all. I'm going to bring back your jobs. Now, the thing is, obviously, he didn't know what to do about bringing back the jobs. And I don't know that he really even tried or cared or gave it any thought. Maybe he did. But the point is, this was the first time that a presidential nominee for either party ever articulated the problem. Like, it's kind of like, I see that you have cancer, and that must suck. Now, you know, I'm not a doctor, and I don't know how to give you chemo. That would still be nice to be acknowledged, you know? I mean, I was thinking about this yesterday in conjunction with watching movies, and I was like, you know, there's all sorts of movies about family dynamics. I'm an only child of a single mom. You know, look this up. There's only one major movie that I can find that has that dynamic, which is a, you know, Little Man Tate, Jodie Foster movie, which I never saw. And I was like, that's completely ignored. That dynamic is not in our culture. Like, we're invisible. Anyone who's ever been invisible, like, you know, like, invisibility feels bad. Donald Trump made people feel seen. That's why they registered to vote. That's why they canvassed for him. Yeah, in 2016. He seemed to lose the thread toward the end of his first term. But the American people are very forgiving, you know, and so he was leaving anyway. They let that go. And COVID distracted everyone. But I think this time there's no avoiding it. I mean, he's doing all this shit for Israel. This is just for Israel. And like, and it's clear, you know what I mean? It's like a narrative that, like, it's not, you could fit it on a bumper sticker. That's easy.
I think, okay, true. I accept that. I think that was part of it. I think the other part of it was rage. Mm-hmm. That Trump embodied this rage against a political system that the American public doesn't believe cared. Meaning, in a real way, he was a weapon of sorts. It's not that the base seems to be terrified of this guy. And whereas the center, for the most part, has failed masterfully aristocrat, that this guy comes across as a different animal. And it's the difference that the American public cared about. Like the fact that he seemed different, a blue-collar billionaire that's willing to basically go and tear down what all of these other liberals in the left and the right have effectively created. I get the sense it was a lot of that also. I agree with you. He did go to those locations. He did come across as being somewhat different. But I think part of me, because I have a hard time reconciling this idea that Trump tried to basically overturn American governance into Trumptopia the first time in 2016. The American public sees it, and then they elect him in 2020. Or 2024. Mm-hmm. That's weird to me. Like, I don't know how you reconcile the two. Like, how I think, obviously I was doing something massively illegal. And now you're putting that
be studying this for years, right? The age of Trump, these three presidencies, right? Including Biden. I think, I mean, first of all, COVID was a black swan moment. It wasn't just like a, you know, time we'll look back on and be like, well, we all have to stay inside. I mean, it literally changed everything. It changed the way we work. where we work, how we work. I mean, you know, there could never be a show like The Office after COVID, right? Because no one goes to the office. So it's a big deal. I think a lot of people, you know, it changed us in a radical way. And Biden, I mean, look, the thing is, if they'd elected, I know we agree, Bernie, for sure. Trump agrees if they'd elected Bernie. Bernie would have had probably much more smooth sailing for those 4 years. But honestly, if they had elected anyone who didn't suck as bad as Joe Biden, almost anyone else on that debate stage in 2020, maybe not Amy Klobuchar, but, you know, you could have put, you know, Gavin Newsom or Tom Steyer or, you know, fucking Pete Buttigieg or, you know, any of those, maybe even Beto O'Rourke, they all would have had a better shot at succeeding as president than Joe Biden did, who was brain dead by the day that he took, by election day 2020. I mean, yeah. He was fried. There was no president. I mean, so that, and then, so the Democrats spend the entire Biden years from 2021 to 2024, instead of addressing the people's problems, the only thing they do is the infrastructure bill, right? Congratulations. Yeah. I mean, you know, that'll have an effect. But meanwhile, the people are dying from high prices and unemployment. They don't get their jobs back post COVID. The housing prices are crazy. Democrats don't focus on any of that. They focus on fucking weird ass shit about Russia and Ukraine. They focus on bullshit, right? The American people don't care about. And they go after Trump over and over, feeding right into his narrative. These people hate me because I'm dangerous to them. And these are the people who you hate. Like, you know, the enemy of your enemy should be your friend. I'm your friend. I think that's why he got returned to power, because the Democrat, it was theirs to lose. They Democrats chose to lose.
I accept that. It's, you know, what's wild about this is both parties are going through went through similar things. So, for example, as you point out, Joe Biden is so occupied with the Ukraine war that takes more that takes up a lion's share of his time. That's the most important thing to him. The American public can see that, right?
Can I just interject? And he chooses the losing side, which the American people never like in a war. Mm-hmm. You chose, it's not just that, you know, South Vietnam, it wasn't going well. We chose the losing side. When you choose the losing side, the voters hold that against you. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, we knocked over the government and assisted that side in starting a war, or at the very least, igniting a war. Totally. And then, yeah, you're right. We lost that war. And it was obvious that we were losing the war over the course of the Biden's term. But it was also obvious that his focus seems to be on that, as opposed to the real world phenomena that Americans were suffering through. If you remember, Jen Psaki came out and made this argument of the, quote, Putin price hike. And that made the argument that our values are not without cost. In fact, I think that was the quote, our values are not without cost, effectively saying that, hey, you as Americans just need to pay more because our values demand that we fight Putin and Russia, which is not going to work.
We never voted on that. You know,
nobody voted on that. And by the way, Trump was making the same argument, though. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't buy as many teddy bears this year. You can't buy 23 teddy bears. Maybe you can only buy two. Right. Or making the argument about the price hike, talking about, well, that's Putin's fault or that's Iran's fault because Iran is, you know, trying to get a nuke and we needed to intervene. And so the cost that you're paying for inflation is related to Iran. Don't blame us for it, which sounds a lot like our values are not without costs. It's very similar, like in regard to the way
that these very similar
governments are.
And whoever breaks that fucking mold is gonna win, right?
Yes, agreed.
And also, you know, getting back to something you said earlier, and I want to echo that, we should do some comments after that, I think, was the honesty aspect, right? Like you don't run away from who you are. Zohran Mamdani didn't run away from being Muslim, having a fucking crazy ass name. When they branded his campaign, I mean, people outside of New York don't know this, but he used graphic design that was straight out of like a street design in Mumbai, right? I mean, it literally, it's bright orange and purple And, you know, these are distinctly Indian designs. The fonts that were used were not meant to, like, sanitize his identity. This is a guy with a beard, right? Like, he's not trying to, like, de-Muslimize himself. The only thing that he does, the only thing that's appealing to, like, quote-unquote mainstream culture is that he always wears a suit, even when he goes to the polar bear swim.
He wore a suit when he went to the polar bear swim?
Fucking funny as shit. And he also went, and while riding a bike through the mean streets of Brooklyn.
That's funny.
I mean, the point is that that's his brand, right? It's kind of like, and I liked it because it's sort of like, I'm a young guy, I'm Muslim, I'm different, I'm Gen Z, but I'm going to be, you know, but I'm also going to be professional. I'll be the mayor. I will dress appropriately. I mean, the point is that he didn't being straightforward, like you were talking about, like the, you know, if you're anti-Zionist, just fucking own it. They're going to nail you anyway. It's like if I were running for office, I'd be like, yeah, I'm a communist. Obviously, we're not going to have communism in the United States anytime soon, sadly, but I'm a communist. You know, you have to own it.
Basically, I'm a true believer. That's what you're getting
across. I believe in something that you might not agree with, but I won't lie to you, right?
But I think the American, like, I think the first person who it takes on a political temperament where they are trying to be straight with the American public is going to be the one that wins.
No doubt.
Because it's a difference.
It had that reputation in 2016. I mean, it's amazing because he lies like the day is long now about everything. Come on, the 300-foot gash in the reflecting pool? I mean, that's not true. That didn't happen. And by the way, I don't understand what's wrong with the national media. They have cameramen, right? I mean, they can go out and see that there's no gash, but they don't. I don't know why. I mean, it's like they can walk over from their studios in Washington. But like, it's just, they lie about everything. And but like at the time, he was viewed as being honest about the things that mattered because he was brusque and crass and he didn't follow the niceties.